I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. The names of Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta will forever be connected with the farm worker movement. In 1962, they founded the National Farm Workers Association, later the United Farm Workers of America, and it was the first successful farm workers union in the U.S. But Chavez and Huerta were not the first to fight for the rights of farm workers.
My name is Maria Moreno. I'm a mother of 12 children.
I've been a worker all my life. I know how to handle a man's job like a man. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm an American citizen, and I'm talking for justice.
Farm worker Maria Moreno rose to represent her peers, male and female, as the first female organizer of the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, AWOC, in California. Her magnetic personality spurred her fellow Mexican-American, Filipino, Black, and Okie farm workers to represent them. She was the first farm worker woman in America to be hired as a union organizer. But her outspokenness may have led to her disappearance from history. Filmmaker Lori Coyle directed the documentary Adios Amor, The Search for Maria Moreno. While researching the farm worker movement, she came across several black and white photos in which one woman frequently appeared. She felt compelled to learn, who was this woman?
Well, in the first place, the photographs were really gorgeous. They were beautiful black and white images from the late 50s, early 60s, and they were not snapshots. They were master photographs taken by George Ballas, who's recognized as the preeminent photographer of the UFW movement. But this was before then, and I was really surprised to see most of the women in the farm worker photographs were anonymous. And I knew that this woman could not really be anonymous because there was a stash of hundreds of photographs and proof sheets of her. So this photographer had clearly spent a good chunk of time following her around as she was organizing. And she was very charismatic. She was clearly very spunky. She was chopping wood. She was haranguing farm workers in the migrant camps. And she often had her children in tow. I come from a large family. We are seven kids. And when I saw a migrant mother with multiple children really out in the world being a political activist, I just thought, wow, who is this woman? And why don't we know anything about her? Why is she not included in farm worker history?
And she's a very striking-looking woman. She has this confidence in the photos that you observe and that you share in the film. And she has also very dark indigenous features. And again, like you said, she's towing her 12 children along to all these meetings. And you can tell by her dress, by the way she carries herself, and also by some of the recordings of her that are featured in the film, she works as hard as any man out on the fields, as I think many women had to do. So what was the path that took you down to discovering who Maria Moreno was? You already knew who the photographer was. Was he the first step in trying to track her down?
Yes. George Ballas, the photographer, was definitely the first step. And from there, I began to track down a lot of old-timers from radio and from journalism from back in the early 60s. So I went and saw all of them first. And they each gave me another thread of Maria Moreno's story. So it was just sort of like one person after the other, each person putting their two cents in. And a portrait of her began to emerge. But actually, I didn't seem to be getting any closer to actually finding Maria Moreno. And that was tremendously frustrating. And then one day, literally kind of out of the blue, I got this packet from Maria Moreno's daughter, Lisa Alama, with all these materials about her grandmother. And they had heard about my project. They had gotten word that I was making this film and reached out to me. At first, I thought this could be the end of the film. You know, I just didn't know what to expect. But as soon as I met the family, it was very transformative. They were very good storytellers, and they really brought their mother to life as a fully three-dimensional person, not just as a labor activist, but as a human being who was on a path to find her own voice, to have a voice, and to make an impact.
And so this film almost traces your search, this journey of recovery of who Maria Moreno was. And prior to you having been contacted out of the blue by Moreno's granddaughter, you had actually reached out to, I know, some radio stations, which many farm workers who were in the region listened to. Maybe they might have had a connection in the past to Maria Moreno or anybody that she may have known. So that whole process was almost a dead end, because in the film you point out that you thought that your search was pretty much null and void up until you got this particular packet. And so the film shows us this group of older women and older men who are Maria Moreno's sons and daughters. And as is evident from, you know, observations I've made of my family, they have this connection amongst themselves. They're sharing stories and they're crying and telling stories about their mother and the memories. And so this woman who for you was so elusive in the past all of a sudden just came to full bloom in front of your eyes.
That's right. That's a beautiful way of putting it. The way I describe the film is that the film begins as my search for Maria Moreno, but ultimately, it's Maria's journey. We are following her journey, and what comes to life through her children's story is just really a portrait of not just a woman and how she managed to be an activist at a time when women were really in the background, but it's really a portrait of family, migrant family life, and not just the trials and tribulations, but just how incredibly resourceful, loving, and spunky they were. A lot of the stories have heart and humor. There's tears, there's laughter. And when Chicano audiences see the film, their comment is to thank us for really capturing what life was like. You know, because most of the documentaries that you see made about the farm workers really focus on the movement, as in the strikes, the boycotts, the picket lines. But it's really about family and community. It's about faith and the faith that sustained them and their beautiful lives. That's what comes to the fore as I followed the story out with them.
So the labor organization AWOC, Maria Moreno was the first female farm worker leader of any farm worker labor union in North America, and she led that particular group. And from what I understand in your film, she was forced out and never was really able to come back in. And it was when she left that the labor leaders that were more familiar with, the United Farm Workers Union, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, they were the ones who sort of came to the forefront. And you brought up a good question in your film. Why didn't they find Maria Moreno, who was obviously working in the same state, working for the same problems, the different unions, but here was a woman who was working for the same goals as they were. Why did they not reach out to her?
Well, I think that's a complex question. In the first place, we have to take into account the fact that there was rivalry between the unions. You know, AWOC, Maria's union, had been organizing for a few years in the Central Valley, and they had called over 100 strikes, and they'd won some short-term gains, but they hadn't really changed the status of farm workers in any major way. Cesar Chavez had a different idea about organizing, and he wanted to start his own thing. And so just around the time that Maria Moreno was fired by AWOC, Chavez started up the National Farm Workers Alliance, the NFWA. And so they actually overlapped and were organizing in the same communities. And there are letters and recordings of Cesar talking about Maria Moreno's big mouth. And so I think there was a fair amount of gender bias there. She was an outspoken woman, and he was probably not used to seeing a woman in that role. I think there's a tendency in all of us to see history in a really telescoped way. And there's been this tendency with the farm worker movement to make it seem as if the whole movement started with Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. that there had never been anything before. In fact, there were unions organizing farm workers in California since 1913 and every decade after that. Why don't we know about them? In part because our country in general suffers from historical amnesia, I believe, but also because I think the Chavez and the United Farm Workers wanted to sort of like have everybody focus on the fact that they were the first ones to actually succeed in getting a contract and getting farm workers to have the right to collectively organize. And that was something that the other unions had fought for, but they had gone down to defeat. So there's this notion that, well, we don't care about these other movements because they were defeated. But I think it's important to care about them and to look at them and to understand the lessons that they offer us, and also to honor the people who fought those struggles and not to forget about them.
Maria Moreno's journey in history kind of ends where she was forced out of AWOC, but her journey continued, as you discovered when speaking to her family, that she picked up her family from California and moved out to Arizona. And from that point, she sort of took up a mission of missionary work, sort of spreading the word of God. And she actually traveled everywhere with her family. But while still on the road doing her missionary work, she was still out there with her family picking fruits, seasonal work in the fields. So obviously her work with farm workers did not end with the union. She was still very much enmeshed in that way of life.
That's correct. Maria Moreno, when she moved to Arizona, she did not entirely leave farm work. I mean, the family would still go and follow the crops. And I think she really needed to follow her calling as she saw it. She had always been a devout Pentecostal, even during her years in the farm workers movement in California. And so I think for her, she saw it as an extension of what were her roots, which was that she wanted to empower and also assist farm workers who were coming north across the border. And they didn't have anything that they were coming to. There were no resources in place at that time. And so I think she began to see that her work was more kind of trans-border work, and it was work not just take care of people's bodies, but also to take care of people's souls. That was very important to her.
Why did you feel it was important to share Maria Moreno's story with viewers?
Oh, my goodness. Maria Moreno was a truly remarkable woman. She was an indigenous woman. Her mother was Mescalero Apache. She was a daughter of Texas. She was a Dust Bowl migrant, and American history never talks about the thousands of Mexican Americans who were part of the Dust Bowl movement. So she represents that larger movement. The other thing that strikes me as truly exceptional about Maria Moreno is that she was elected by her union, which was a very diverse group of farm workers. They were not only Mexican American, they were Filipinos, they were African Americans, they were Okies, and they were Arkies. She was elected to be their spokesperson at a time when California and the entire country was incredibly segregated, which is not to say that it's not segregated now. But when Chavez and the UFW came in, there were many Anglo supporters of that movement, but they tended to be people from the outside who came in to help with the boycott and the picket lines. In Maria Moreno's case, it's something totally different. The white farm workers that elected her were her peers. So it was a very different situation. And we need to understand how remarkable that was at a time. This was before the March on Washington. This was before second wave feminism. You know, this was at a time when women, of course, were sustaining the movements, but they were always in the background, behind the scenes, and anonymous. And she completely rewrote the rule book. And that's a really inspiring message for women today. And I always say, as far as the history piece is concerned, why we should care about history. If we stand on the shoulders of the people who came before us, we have a wider vision. And so that's why I think it's really important for all of us to know Maria Moreno's story.
We've been speaking with Lori Coyle, director of the documentary Adios Amor, The Search for Maria Moreno. Coyle was first introduced to the plight of farm workers through her father, who volunteered at a United Farm Workers clinic in Delano, California, during the 1960s grape strike. Coyle's past works have been nominated for an Imagen Award and a National Council of La Raza Alma Award. When we come back, honoring the elders of West Side San Antonio.
Oh, I have a lot of history in the West Side, and I'm still living there.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The west side of San Antonio is predominantly poor and Hispanic and has a reputation disputed by its residents for being crime-ridden. But many of its residents wouldn't want to live anywhere else. Many of the west side's oldest residents have stories to tell, but historians normally don't come knocking on their doors. Their stories are now available in both print and song. On a drizzly, misty, cool Sunday afternoon, the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center was packed with young and old to hear these stories. Large portraits of the West Side's elders, taken by Antonia Padilla, lined the walls. Guadalupe Berta Flores is the oldest woman in the room.
I was born on March the 16th of 1921.
The 97-year-old grew up on the West Side. Flores was the youngest of seven children and served in the U.S. Navy as a switchboard operator at the tail end of World War II.
I went in and the war stopped, so I stopped. I was barely a year and a half. And I said, the minute they saw me come in, they stopped the war. And they used to kid me, my family. Yeah, with your face, we wouldn't stop anything.
As a child, Flores remembers playing nurse with the other kids in the neighborhood and giving them green grapes as medicine. Her parents grew a large grapevine across their front porch.
They wouldn't let me go nowhere else but on the porch. So the kids would come over and we'll play. If you were sick, I'd give you a green grape.
Another elder, Jesse Vidales, is only slightly younger than Flores.
Oh, I have a lot of history in the West Side, and I'm still living there. Because I was born there in 1921. That's only 97 years ago. And I'm still here. The only time that I left my wonderful, beautiful West Side and my San Antonio was when I was inducted in the military. 1943.
Vidalis says he's not going anywhere yet.
According to what I have heard, my doctors and the VA, they all tell me that they believe that maybe I'm going to get to live another 20 years. My father's grandfather lived to the ripe old age of 123 years.
The stories of Vidalis, Flores, and 10 other elders are included in the book Still Here, Homenaje al West Side de San Antonio. It was created by musician, composer, and poet Lourdes Perez. She gathered the oral histories of 12 of the West Side's elders and set their stories to music.
Based on their stories, we figure out what styles, what songs, how to honor, best honor the story. And then we gather and invited over 20 musicians from the west side of San Antonio to be part of the recording.
It was a project 2 years in the making. One of the songs in the book and CD is Salimos Ganando, or We Come Out Winning. Perez says it was inspired by the story of Lucy and Ray Perez.
They had a very hard life, but every year for 3 years in a row, they won the dance competitions that they used to have here. And they danced anywhere from jitterbug to waltzes, chotises, redoas. And within the song that I did for them, there is the rhythms of jitterbug, redoba, chotis, a cast of stars from Flaco Jimenez to Eva Ibarra to Max Baca. It pays tribute to those sounds, but it's not pretending to be what's already happened. That's one of the songs. That's the one. That's Salimos Ganando. Yeah. that's Eva Ibarra in accordion.
Over the decades, the west side of San Antonio has been subject to urban renewal that has displaced many of its residents and demolished historic buildings. But Graciela Sanchez, director of the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, says the community survives.
It is complicated. There is poverty, but there's also richness in culture and tradition and convivencia, how people come together and share the little that they have with one another. And that was a way in the past, and that's kind of gotten lost today.
In other words, they're still here, and they're not going anywhere. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor, and Vince Kong is our digital editor. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.